Hello, this is Bart Baggett, President of Handwriting University. I am the host and sponsor of the Handwriting Conference, which you are listening to. This is a snippet of a lecture given in the summer of 2007. It was on a Friday afternoon. I think this was the last or next to last session of a three-day International Handwriting Conference sponsored by Handwriting University. I'm going to put you into the lecture about minute 13. If you do purchase the entire seminar, you can listen to the first 13 minutes. The reason I do that is a lot of people, if they want to get to the meat and the heart of the MP3, they don't want to hear some of the banter and how you doing and here's the schedule, which of course is included in the first few minutes. Although you did miss the following information. I did a clever story about Get Smart versus Get Shorty, the movies. I talked about why some students fail their test scores, and it does relate to the topic at hand, which is how to choose metaphors and give a great verbal analysis. I also talked about fear of public speakings, and if you really want to be successful, it would be great if you learn how to speak, which is part of giving a great verbal analysis. Why radio shows can catapult your career, and then also a little bit about some background and some stories of me being on radio shows and why I was so successful in that particular medium. I'm going to start the lecture about minute 13 or so, and I'm kind of coming into it to giving a couple of stories. One where we're talking about chasing a woman down on a bicycle wearing a Handwriting University sweatshirt, and then also a couple of funny things about Jesus and how he used metaphors. This all leads up to the meat of the presentation, which is how to use metaphors and choose your words wisely as you do a verbal analysis, because if you're listening to this, you want to be better, you want to be more approved of, you want to be more accurate in your handwriting analysis. And then later in the presentation, we actually get an actress up on stage. We attempt to act out some information about how you would direct somebody so you can kind of get your head around how you would turn words into something directorial. And then also on this page, I've added a link to a video which was actually not at this conference, but was later in the year, filmed live in India in 2007, which also explains the idea of metaphors a little farther. So after you listen to this 30 or 45 minute lecture, make sure you check out that 10 minute video. I think you'll get the idea of metaphors really, really firm, and then you can expand it on your own time. So here I am, jumping right into listening to me, Bart Baggett, in 2007 at the International Handwriting Conference.
Is that knowing the right metaphor is very important. Your story of meeting on the radio was second only to the other young lady who, Marianne, are you in the room? Where's Marianne? Okay, somebody in Morton, Illinois, which is where Marianne works, too, was at a garage sale in Morton, Illinois. Raise your hand if who's the story? All right, you. You're at a garage sale in Morton, Illinois. She's sitting there looking. Your mother, oh, it's even better. Your mother, and off, someone rides a bicycle by, is that correct? And on the bicycle is a woman? Wearing a sweatshirt that says Handwriting University. And she's riding away. So the mother is like,
my mother's 75, trying to chase this lady down on the bicycle.
So the 75-year-old is chasing the woman down on the bicycle, right? That's my impression of your mother. And they didn't even have a conversation, right? She was fast. Those sweatshirts make you fast, first of all. If I had one to sell you, I would, but we don't even sell them anymore. So the mother gets up off the ground because she clearly would have fallen after running that fast. And she calls her daughter and says, you've talked about handwriting. Go on the internet and see if you can find this place, because apparently somebody's selling sweatshirts in Morton. So it must exist. $16,000 later, you're sitting right here, and we appreciate that. And that's the best story I know of how you got in this chair, second only to yours, my nymphomaniac friend from Atlanta. Now, all those are funny stories, right? They're funny stories that prove a point. If you can do a story, you will clarify people's meaning easier than if you just tell them the statistics. When I was studying the Bible, I'm sorry, my dad said that this morning, and I was like, when was that? Was there a seminary school in your resume that I missed? Because I don't remember that part of my childhood. What are you doing, Dad? Studying the Bible. Come back later. I'm busy. I'm in Thessalonians. There was a revelation there. Okay. Again, the fluid F, trying to find out where I was. Okay. It's very complicated. is the point is, if you're on radio or you're talking to somebody, if you can do a story, Jesus talked in parables, Jesus talked in stories. He said, and I am going to quote this correctly, you can... Me trying to quote Jesus is tough. Maybe I'll just quote Buddha. Maybe it's for the best. We'll leave that to the good folk. Veto. Something along the lines of, you can teach a man to fish and feed him for a lifetime, or you can just give a man a fish and give him a meal. That was close, right? Metaphor. Give a man a fish, feed him for a day. Fish, feed him for a lifetime. That's catchy. You know, that guy, he's going to be big. I'm going to buy stock in that guy. We had two people go, so irreverent. Metaphors are useful. In handwriting analysis, you can do this. One of the early, it all came back to me. Memory. Good. Came back to me. Is that it lost it. It went away. It was there, and then it went away. One of the criticisms when I was 19 years old doing radio was that when Bart's on radio, he doesn't know what he's doing. He's just listing some traits. He doesn't really understand handwriting. He's just listing some traits. And although that is not true, I did know what I was doing. In the medium of radio, you have time to list two or three traits. Okay. What I'm probably better at now is, instead of saying your T-bar is in the middle, you have an average self-image, I probably would have said you look in the mirror and you find a lot of imperfections about yourself. Now, that criticism, of course, is from other handwriting experts that were older than me and weren't on radio and TV, and they're green with envy, and that's okay, because they're still green with envy, and you guys are on radio. Derek was almost on ET because he decided to come from us. We've got so many people who we've heard radio and TV shows. Teresa, have you been? Beth? Beth was on Good Morning Fox?
Good Day Texas.
Good Day Texas.
Twice. They reran it.
They reran it. Excellent. So controversy sells. By the way, in your own hometown, there's no reason you shouldn't be the handwriting expert. If you would write one press release, put a little website, and just call the producers at the TV radio shows and say, look, I'm certified now. I live in your town. If there's ever a story relating to handwriting, yesterday, Paris Hilton, the biggest story in the country, all of us got phone calls the same morning because we're all listed on the websites. You will get a phone call because they don't know you exist. And every 4 to 6 months, some celebrity does something really stupid, and you could be on the radio. Okay, but they just need to know you're there. So I'm saying that she's now the top person in Dallas. Does that make sense? Why didn't they call Kurt? Because they found her website, right? How'd they find you anyway? We don't know. Oh, they called for me. They called for me, and I'm not in Dallas anymore. Right, okay. Great. Because I don't... Here, take it. I'm retiring. This is too hard. Makes sense. They just said he lists his traits. It's better to have a metaphor. What's a metaphor? What does that mean? What does a metaphor mean? Another way of saying it. Be more specific. What is metaphor? Is it a story? An illustration? An analogy, correct. A little different, but either way is good. Let's pick sensitive criticism. What does it look like in handwriting? Loopy D. So, you're sitting there talking to somebody at a restaurant. They give the handwriting the big loop in the D. What do you tell them, Tracy? You have a big loop in your D? Would you tell them that?
No.
You would not tell them that. Why? Because you're not there to teach them handwriting, right? So you may point out the T sometimes. Sometimes I do that if there's... Tracy.
Oh, you're doing really bad.
Again, quiet game starting now. Tracy, what would you say? Loop in the D.
It's a loop in the D. I would just tell
it's okay. It wasn't that. This is why we're here. There's notes or unless your name's Travis.
Let's see.
Do you feel the love? This is all supporting. This is supporting, and there's no criticism here. You sense B.
I would tell him that... They worry about what other people think about them.
We'll start with that. There's no wrong. Do you worry about people think about you? Okay, so that's a good start. You have one there. What would you say?
Well, I would say your feelings can get hurt very easily.
Okay, that's a good start. Anybody else?
I have different approaches to D. I tell them they're very careful about how they appear. They like to look nice. They like to look nice.
Good.
Careful,
best foot forward. That's definitely a metaphor, right? Careful about what you wear. You care. Those are all, that actually brings them into their home, right? Looking in the mirror. Okay, you had one over here. You give them a compliment. So you would just bypass and just start sucking up to them, basically. She would just give them a compliment. She would think, "There's the hand running. I can totally sell this person something." Yeah. Okay. Thank you. And that's not what we're looking for, but I love it. I love that you're using this for your own personal gain. That's great. What's yours?
I would say that, for the most part, if they put a shirt and pants on and they walked out, they were sensitive criticism, and somebody said, "That shirt doesn't go with your pants," they might turn around and back and change their shirt.
Excellent. So he just said, depending on what you're wearing, if somebody criticizes your clothing, you might actually go home and change it. Okay, that is a great metaphor for sense of criticism. And this is why. If you use the technical terms, like a psychological term, you're subject to somebody not having any understanding of psychology. You sure wouldn't use the word you're a sociopath or you're, psychotically about. Does it not? I mean, if you don't know what that word means, you're like, okay, that's weird. What are you trying to say about me, man? This is Texas. So you wouldn't use technical words. You would explain, your closet is probably very much aligned. Your sock drawer is color coordinated. You like to have all the dishes in the right proper. You explain what anal-retentive means rather than use the word anal-retentive. If you get in the habit of doing this, you're going to be great. The challenge is you could pick a metaphor that doesn't really work anymore, because when you go from technical stuff, which is accurate, to metaphor, you're going from science into a little bit of art. And the only art of handwriting analysis, in my opinion, is the art of the metaphor and the art of delivering it in a loquacious way, in an oration or being an orator. That is the art, and I think it's an art that it's okay. It's okay to have an aspect of this that's artistic, because as you describe it, it's useful. Phyllis Mattingly was, an artist with words. If you've listened to the interview on our marketing course, we spend, I guess, 2 or 3 hours talking to her about her life and about marketing. And when she did analysis, she would use these metaphors that were just amazing. And she grew up in, the 30s or 40s, so she had reference points that I would never have. She used vocabulary words that I would never use. It's like reading an L. Ron Hubbard book. There's these words that are just really interesting, but you remember these people were 20, 30 years, different generation. And she was great. And so I don't sound like her at all when I give an analysis. And Kurt doesn't sound like, and I won't sound like you, but you eventually develop your own set of metaphors and analogies that are really your own, and that they work. If you paint a picture properly, people will understand it better than if you list traits. Okay? Who here likes movies? Anyone? Has anyone ever directed a movie or a scene or anything? 1, 2, 2 of you. Play? Anyone directed a play? Okay. If you could all pretend to be directors for a second, I'd like you to work with me here. Who's an actor? Is there any actors in here? Who's the SAG member? Can I have you? Come on up here. Let's give her a big round of applause, shall we? We have a mag. Is it okay that we're not paying you SAG scale, so is it okay? We promised not to get you in trouble. Cynthia. This is Carolyn. Sorry, Carolyn. Carolyn. Now, Carolyn's an actress, right? Who wants to be her director? How about you? Are you want to be director? Okay, so here's what he's trying to do. He's trying to explain to these other people what sensitive to criticism means. You're sensitive to criticism, okay? Now, she's your actress, so what would you tell her to do? Because what you want to do is, these are the audience members, and they want to just watch her, and you can't talk. I guess you could talk, but there's the internal dialogue. But whatever scene you want, at the end of this 60-second scene, they should totally get what does it mean to be sensitive to criticism. And obviously, her sitting there doing a clinical definition would not be the best, because you've got sight, sound, you got special effects. Can you do that Matrix thing? That'd be cool. Yeah, I got it. So go ahead, direct her. Direct her. What would she do to illustrate sensitive criticism?
So you have prepared yourself to go out into the public. You're looking very nice. Because you'd like to look very nice for the public. And when you come out of the public, you will meet Bart, and Bart will say, "That is an unusual shade to go with those pair of pants." And you will feel nice. knives stuck into your tongue like bark, you have stabbing.
Why do I have to be the bad guy in this? Who's casting this?
You're the only one.
I want a new casting director. So he again said that you're gonna have look nice. So she's gonna dress up. She's gonna leave. She's gonna meet some friend of her, and her friend's gonna criticize it.
Yes.
And then what's she going to do? You didn't tell her what knife.
You will feel pain if this person really has pike stabbed you.
But how does she do that? I mean, can you interpret that as an actress?
In your face, you will understand that it is painful to be afraid to be in the public with ugly clothes.
Are you good? Do you think you know what he's asking for? Okay. Okay, so you have now you're going to get ready. You're going to primp, is that correct? So I'm just going to be her buddy, her friend. Well, hi, Carolyn. That's an interesting choice you've made to go with that bracelet. Was it dark when you got dressed? Did I say something wrong? This always happens. You okay? I do. I just don't like your outfit.
But I bought it just for you.
Really? Wow. Is that what you think of me? Carolyn, thank you very much.
Way overacting.
Overacting on purpose.
Yes.
Now let me ask you, she actually did a lot in the face stuff. Now when you're trying to illustrate sensitive criticism, was it easier to see a scene or a dialogue on what she would do? Okay. Another one would be, for example, act this one out for me. I look in the mirror and I say, Carolyn, when you look in the mirror, you find all the imperfections. I want to see you look in the mirror and find imperfections. Not that there are any, because I don't see any, but hypothetically.
I was going to say I didn't see any either.
So here's a mirror. What would you do? Because I want you to see her. I want you to see her looking in the mirror. Okay. Now, does that make sense? Now do you know what someone that's sensitive, they look in the mirror? Okay. Is that better than saying you're sensitive to criticism? Okay, good. You, my friend, need an Oscar nomination.
I will win one.
Thank you. I'll be up there as well. Okay. And we can't edit that out if SAG doesn't want us to be on an industrial video seen by 16 people on the internet. So metaphors are basically you painting pictures with words, and that's the difference. If you can create a picture in somebody's brain, they understand it better. There's a great phrase called "a picture's worth a thousand words." So when you are using words to describe personality, if you can give them a picture in their head, you've saved yourself a thousand words. Therefore, a metaphor is useful. So what you need to do is learn, you should have a metaphor for every trait. Now would be a good time to sell you a book of metaphors. We don't have one. We don't have one. But you know what? I would love to publish one if you would make one. Which if you all would write in and say, here's my favorite metaphors for these, we could probably assemble them. I would probably just add them to the course online and not even charge you. Because it's a very useful skill. And it's a skill that most people only master after listening to our audio tapes 2, 3, and 4 times. How many listen to those CDs or tapes more than once? Do you find yourself using the same words that Kurt and I use? That's the way I learn. I listen to those cassettes over and over and over. I mean 8-tracks. I mean DVDs. You know, I'm turning 21 next week. Big party. Okay, this is the power of the right metaphor. Okay, you think I'm bouncing around for no reason? I did have a reason. Yes, ma'am.
I have something I'd like to ask your opinion on.
Yes.
I do witness training, as I told you. We
Okay, let me repeat the question. Her statement was she does witness training. She trains witnesses. Start with something positive, then something negative, then something positive again.
You always end with something positive because you don't want them leaving with a negative.
You don't want them leaving with a negative taste in your mouth. Okay. The one-minute manager talks about how to manage your employees, and that essentially is the philosophy. Give three good things and then the bad thing. Hey, I've called you here because you're a moron, and I need to tell you that you're doing terrible. But you wouldn't say that. I called you here because I wanted to tell you a couple things about your job. First of all, you're a great dresser. Secondly, I noticed you've always been on time. And thirdly, everyone seems to like you, and that's really pleasant here in the office. Fourthly, you're a moron. Then you say, it's great, let's go to the picnic. So I do agree that that's a good policy. When you're doing handwriting, I've only experienced once or twice, like with Travis, his story was, it was all negative. Like, it was just so hard to find something positive. And if somebody's that sensitive and that sort of erratic, they're going to take it wrong anyway. So it's hard to be delicate to someone that's absolutely crazy. But very few people are absolutely crazy. Most people are balanced. Or if they're a little bit crazy in certain areas, they sort of know it. Like, you can tell someone's a pathological liar, like, look, I gotta tell you, I don't know how to explain it to you, but you'll lie when the truth is better. You know, you'll lie and they'll laugh, and, yeah, I do that. Or you say, you know, you're uncomfortable telling the truth because it could hurt you, so you learned a long time ago that it's better to just, you know, not tell people the truth or shade the truth to your terms, and I'm not saying it's always bad. So there's ways to say it. There's a great metaphor that says, you know, you tend to not reveal information about yourself. You would basically let someone walk around the house looking for their keys, and you would never tell them the keys are in the kitchen. And then you would say, well, you didn't ask me. If you'd have asked me, I would have told you. But they're reticent. That's the trait called reticence. So reticent means they don't easily give information away. Now, if I tell you you're reticent, what does that mean to you? It's not near as good as watching me walk around looking for my keys, and then you didn't say anything. Does that make sense? It's so much better if you can give them a graphical interpretation. That will take some time. One of the reasons that I keep insisting that we offer MP3s and CDs, people love videos. The customers tend to want videos. However, I as a teacher have found that the people that listen to the CDs over and over and over become better analysts. And that's because that auditory track of learning the metaphors is only digested by repetition. So even though the DVDs are great, and even on our new websites, which I guess in 10 years we probably won't even sell DVDs, it'll all be downloadable, but hopefully be downloadable into your little iPod, but hopefully the audio tracks will still be there so you can listen to that over and over. I listen to Dr. Walker and Phyllis for hours and hours and hours, and that's one of the reasons I became great at picking the right metaphor. Now, the thing I was trying to say earlier, thanks, is that when you pick metaphors, you may not pick the right metaphor. If you look at somebody and say, you're attracted to strong, challenging men, and you're just not satisfied unless he's challenging. You know, you may even like a guy on a Harley Davidson, right? That would probably work. Do you know what trait I would be referring to? A stinger, a small little hook, right? That's a fair trait, unless the woman just got married 6 months ago to the man of her dreams. And then she will deny that that's true. Why would she deny it? Either A, self-deceit. B, maybe she's on her fourth marriage and she really broke the pattern. But essentially, if they're in an illusion that, you know, everything's perfect, they would say, no, I used to be that. And they'll always say, I used to be that way. But this guy's, he's nice. He's never an a-hole at all. He's great. I used to be that way, but not anymore. I know he probably is strong. I know he's probably dominant, but she doesn't know that because she's in this delusion called the first 6 months of marriage. Derek, you're the relationship expert. I really shouldn't be treading on your area of expertise. Okay? Well, I'm saying that I would pick a metaphor, and she's like, oh, that's not true at all. I don't do that anymore. I go, oh, well, did you used to? Yeah, I used to. It's probably, I'm just saying that people will deny things that are true. Or in some cases, they really did heal, and they really have shifted that. In my experience, I think they have. If it's in the writing, it's usually still part of their personality. That's been my experience. I'm not going to argue with them though, because you know, and if they're paying you, they're not going to argue with you anyway, because they really need your help. It's the ones that are just you're trying to demonstrate how useful it could be, that may argue with you, and you don't want to be wrong, because if you're wrong three times out of the four times, they're going to think the whole science is bunk. If you use four metaphors that are all don't land properly, they're going to think you're crazy. If you get too metaphorical and don't have any scientific, they're going to think that you're a palmist or astrologer or something. And I don't have anything against those two particular fields of study. It's just that they tend to have the reputation of being ambiguous, or it could apply to a lot of people. I never want them to say, you know what, that could apply to everybody. But if you think about it, there's only five or six slants, right? And most people are not all five of them. Most people tend to A or B, C, C. I mean, really, half of you in here are DE writers, most likely. At least three quarters of you. Or, I mean, at least one quarter of you. So that's going to be general. So if I describe that trait only, it's going to affect a fourth of you. Yes, ma'am. Carolyn.
The woman you're talking about, let's say she did go with someone who's different than she is changing. How long of a time frame will it take for her writing to reveal that?
That's a great question. The question is, if somebody changes a personality and they change something significant, let's say they no longer have anger. They've gone to therapists, they've beaten some pillows, and they've got it out. How long does it take for the writing to catch up? The answer is, I don't know. I've met people that, honestly, knowing them, I think that doesn't make any sense. They really aren't that way anymore. The writing still changes. The writing's still there. The same thing happens with injuries. If your body heals and you're full function of your leg, why does your handwriting still show a pain dot or injury dot in that area of the handwriting? So I honestly don't know whether it disappears completely or it stays. I simply don't know. And I told you the first day of the seminar, there'll be times I just don't know. It usually indicates the person was that way or is now. I'm sure not going to fight someone to say you're definitely that way or you're still sensitive, you're self-image. I'm not going to fight them, especially belief systems. If they believe that they got a good self-image, that's a belief that's just as important as the neurological pathway of the T-bar. Because beliefs are half the battle. If you watch The Secret or What the Bleep Do We Know or any book you've ever read on self-help, belief systems are the essential crux of someone's ability to manifest things in the world. So I don't want to change their belief systems, even if they are full of self-deceit. Obviously, you want to navigate them in a therapy situation. This page right here, oh, it's very tiny, isn't it? Huh. Right here. Stroke, trait, name, definition, metaphor. All right, let's pick one. Open up your book to this definition. Under stroke, what does the word stroke mean? Yeah, it's going to be the ink on the page. It's the ink on the page. So write the first one, a loop in the D. Put a little loop in the D. I would draw a little loop in the D. The second one, make a downturn Y. And the third one, make a... Correct. And the third one, make a low T bar. A low T bar. So in the first one, what is it, loop in the D? Okay, under stroke. Has everybody got it? I would draw it. Now, what is the trait name for a loop in the D? Fear, write down fear of criticism or sensitive criticism. Write that down. This is how you use your chart. What is the next stroke? What is that trait name? Fear of success. Write down fear of success. Okay. And the third one is what? Low self-esteem. Now, what is a definition? Obviously, your whole definition will not fit in this box. So make a little arrow. The definition would be of sensitive criticism. You are excessively reactive to another person's verbal criticism. Does that make sense? That would be like a definition. Someone who sensitive criticism overreacts to any kind of negative comments. That would be a clinical definition, right? What would be a metaphor for sensitive criticism? Yeah, oversensitive. What would be a metaphor? Or a story? Or an analogy? Let's paint a picture. Let's paint a picture. I like the pictures. You look in the mirror. You. If someone criticized your tie, you would go home and change it. Perfect. You put makeup on and go to the store. That would be great if you're talking to a woman that lives in the South. Well, I'm saying that if you were talking to someone in Venice, women don't wear makeup in Venice, California. Yeah, and I'm saying that, again, if it's a woman, it would make sense. So, again, it's all contextual. I think it's a fine metaphor, but it is. It means you're so sensitive, you care what people think about you. I think it works in Beaumont, Texas, for sure. It may not work in Oregon, where the women have beards. So what's the next one? What's the next? The second one is a loop in the fear of success. The trait name is fear of success. The definition is what? Remember, do a definition without a metaphor in it. Yeah, the psychological profile of someone who shies away from success due to fears or negative associations with success. Something like that. Something clinical. The fact that you think in metaphors is good, it means we've done a good job already. We want you to talk in metaphors because it's better for people to hear it. But it's not very clinical. Now, Kurt's favorite metaphor for downturn Y is what? Yes, that's correct. You would screw up a one-man funeral. Boy, he's a clever man. Now, that took me a while to figure that one out. I had to put myself at the funeral and think, man, if I'm here, I must be dead. If it's just one, man, that, woo, how'd you screw that up? Yeah, get your head around that. What's the last one? Low self-esteem. Clinically definition, cumulative, low self-esteem. Anyone want to give me a definition of it? Yeah, they underestimate a person who, boy, it's hard to talk about, finds imperfections, that would be metaphorical, you know. The cumulative weight of one's self-worth is low, you know. One who consistently undervalues his own value and accepts less in life. Okay, whatever it is. Now, what would be a metaphor for it? Hear about this one. Here's one. That you stay in a bad relationship much too long. You've used that one, right, Derek? That's true unless she just found the love of her life.
Could be Travis.
Could be Travis, right. So, again, it worked perfectly for somebody single because everyone in a single can relate to the fact that they've stayed in relationships way past the time they could have, except for the one I'm in now, which is amazing. You see, so I'm saying it will almost always work unless they have a context which makes them think that they've changed it. Yes, ma'am? You have. In the past, you've probably stayed in... That would be perfect. You would cover yourself. Now, the only downside to this lecture is I'm not attempting to teach you how to say things just so people agree with you. I'm not. This is not a mind reading. There is something. Is it called mind reading? With magicians, they actually teach how to look for things about the person to trick them. It's essentially like, oh, aren't I genius? Oh, my car. Like they essentially look for ways to impress you and say things in an intentionally ambiguous way, so that you will think that they have some kind of psychic power. This is magicians, it's part of the act of being a magician. I'm not criticizing, it's what they do, they teach it, they have books on it. It's called mind reading or cold reading. I think it's called mind reading. And that's not what I'm saying. Am I correct? Illusionist. Distraction. Yeah, this is art of distraction. Look here, and I'm going to take a card and a chicken, and boom, there's a hamster, right? Okay. So I'm not teaching you that. What I'm saying is that... If you can get the trait correct, which you will if you memorize all the traits and understand the stacking, then when you translate it into the hearing of an average person who's not trained, it's better to use a metaphor that they can relate to. That's what I'm attempting to look across. I would never teach how to be ambiguous, how to say things in a way everyone would agree to. I don't ever want to be accused of being a general. And if somebody does, I'll pull them aside and say, great, come here, let's look at the handwriting. I said this, here it is. I said this, here it is. I said this, here it is. Now take these six traits and go talk to anyone in this room and see if they agree with it. Because it's not true. It's not ambiguous. And if you know algebra, the chances of me getting this plus that plus that plus that plus that plus that exactly correct is very slim versus getting one thing. Because one thing might apply to 20 people. But when you stack it up, the statistics get in your favor that you're being very unique. So pick three more with your neighbor and finish this chart. Three more traits. If you don't know what a trait is, grab your grapho deck or your dictionary and pick one, and then you're going to write a metaphor for each of them. Everybody does it. Okay, take a break and do that. Those of you at home, thank you for joining us.
Hi, this is Bart Baggett, and thank you for listening to that lecture. I hope you enjoyed it. The idea of metaphors and how to phrase handwriting analysis is a really wonderful topic, and I go into much more detail in the 501 Advanced course as well, of course, in the Home Study course. If you like this lecture, you like listening to MP3s, you like listening to live seminars, I encourage you to get the entire copy of the 2007 International Handwriting Conference. It's on sale for a limited time. And remember, as a monthly member of Handwriting University, you get 2 to 4 hours a month of new unreleased content as your membership moves through that first year. You can get the gold or a silver membership very inexpensively, and that qualifies you for live, online, or telephone classes every month. There's lots of ways to learn about handwriting analysis, psychology, success, and everything else from Handwriting University. Please give us a call. Tell us if you'd like to learn by audio, video, home study course, or seminar, and one of our staff members will lead you to the right set of products. Again, if you like audios, you like MP3s, start downloading some of these home study courses using our online downloadable courses. Our entire catalog, including the 501 and the new mastery course, is all at handwritinguniversity.com, and our phone number in North America is 1-800-398-2278. You can always find our contact information online at myhandwriting.com or World Wide Web, handwritinguniversity.com. I hope you continue being a weekly newsletter reader. Check your inbox every week for something new from Handwriting University. And my name is Bart Baggett. Thanks for listening to the lecture.